This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 12th of January, 2022, and we've had another extension of this comeback we saw starting Monday and yesterday's trade. As you can see in the U.S. equity markets, and Peter's caution and note, or at least caution for the bears, note that this incredible divergence we'd seen in some of these highly geared stocks to earnings, the sort of the speculative space, if you will, bubble stocks, et cetera, their negative performance relative to the positive performing sectors was at such remarkable extremes. He expected some of that would close in coming sessions, and we've pretty much accomplished that. I mean, this could obviously extend some more. There still is considerable divergence. But look at the equity theme basket performance you can see on slide two there. Something like bubble stocks having a plus 2.7% gain yesterday after, even though they're still month to date and year to date at minus 8%. Crypto as well, bouncing back very strongly, etc. So, but looking at the broader averages, we're still concerned. We got to consider the backdrop here of a more hawkish Fed. That drumbeat continues. Concerns on inflation and especially potentially wage inflation, and we'll talk more about this later in the podcast, potentially pressuring margins. We're going to see what companies have to say about that, of course, with their earnings reports as we get into the heart of earnings season starting essentially this week, but really in the next week to 2 weeks. And do note as well on the technical front, if you look at the S&P 500, you can see that we've bounced back to a critical bounce back, if you will, Fibonacci level, which is the 61.8% retracement. Around 47.20 on the future. And of course, yesterday we saw Fed Chair Powell out in his nomination hearing. We saw some, what's becoming as expected hawkish rhetoric from the likes of the hawkish Kansas City Fed President Esther George, who was out talking about the need to do quantitative tightening and said that she had voted to, or she is in favor of moving in March. The nomination hearing, though, from Fed Chair Powell and these other speeches, not really inspiring new highs for the cycle in terms of Fed expectations. We also saw the longer end of the yield curve, so the U.S. yields pulling back slightly after their recent high. So there was no sort of new energy into the situation. With risk sentiment rising, we saw the dollar dropping a bit. And that also helped gold, and I'll get to you later on that a little bit. For now, we need to look again at the Treasury space. I'd say it's an important day because we have, first of all, we had an auction yesterday, but that's for the three-year Treasury. I guess it's a bit more interesting to see the further out the curve, the auction today for the 10-year and tomorrow for the 30-year.
Yeah, absolutely, John. Part of that reversal that we have seen in yields yesterday, especially in the long part of the yield curve, has been caused by the three-year note auction. It was a very solid auction. It stopped through by 0.4 basis points. The bid to cover was above the past six auction average. And in direct bid, there's rose to 61.6%. The reason behind that is what we commented on the podcast yesterday, that the yield offered by this auction was the highest yield since February 2020. So I suspect that the same is going to happen today with the 10 years US Treasury auction. And I'm going to take you to slide number six, where in the chart on the right, in orange, you have the 10-year US Treasury yield. And in blue, instead, you have the high yield at the 10 years US Treasury auction. And as you can see, if the auction prices at the current US Treasury yield, it's going to be the highest yield offer since January 2020. So real money, such as pension fund and insurances, are unlikely to pass on these opportunity. And this might mean that we will see the long part of the yield curve dropping slightly as well. It's true that today we have also CPI readings, but as you just mentioned, John, yesterday, Federal Reserve speakers have done a good job at trying to pass the message that the Fed is there to fight inflation. So I don't expect much volatility surrounding these readings today.
All right. Well, one place we have seen volatility, though, is in the credit space. Certainly, if you look at the likes of these ETFs, high-yield ETFs, things like the JNK and the HYG, pretty volatile and largely following the action we've seen in the equity market, where we saw a considerable sell-off and a very steep backup over the last couple of days. But it looks as it's interesting to see this kind of volatility in the space. And obviously, we need to track credit spreads as well as the Fed is launching its tightening regime. But what are you seeing, or what would you like to pull out in terms of the focus in corporate and corporate credit spreads and the action in that market?
Well, John, when we look at the corporate bond space, we have to be very careful at what we see. In slide 4 on the left side, I put a chart that shows in green the spread over US treasuries of investment grade corporate bonds, and in black the spread of high yield corporate bonds over US treasuries. And as you can see, these spreads have both widened, the investment grade spread by 1 basis point and the high yield spread by 8 basis points. If you look at it like that, it looks that weakness has been predominant in high yield corporates, which is kind of true, because also if we look at the HYG, HIG ETF, flows have been negative, while the one of the investment grade ETF has been positive. But the big takeaway here is that the correction in spread in the high yield space has been modest. It is nowhere where it was, for example, in February 2021, when we have seen US treasuries rising fast. And also, if we look at the spread between high yield and investment grade corporate bonds, it remains in check. And that's the graph that you see always in slide 4 on the right hand side. The spread between the two remains around 200 basis points. So what does that mean? It means that there is not yet that kind of weakness in the junk bond space that could leak to other risky assets. And we have to wait for that spread to widen in order to see that. We will have a better understanding of the condition of the junk bond space this month. January is always a busy month for corporate bond supplies, and it's going to be critical to see how investors demand positions for these supply, especially in the junk bond space.
Yeah, and unfortunately, unlike the cycle heading into the global financial crisis, it doesn't seem to be much of a leading indicator anymore. I noted back in 2018 that it was very simultaneous with the sell-off in credit happened basically simultaneous with when the equity market finally decided it had enough of the Fed's tightening, and they both rolled over almost simultaneously. Whereas if you go back to the global financial crisis time frame, you had credit spreads almost screaming pain for months before the rest of the market was discovering what was going on. But
John, I think that at this point, the main focus for the corporate market is on duration. Indeed, if you look at the total return of junk versus investment grade, junk was down just 1%, is down 1% in terms of total return since the beginning of the year, while investment grade is down 2%, double as much. So basically what I'm saying is that at this point in time, duration is more relevant when you look at performance of corporate assets.
And that's where the clever heads in the fixed income space and their perspective is so important, because that is, of course, an important point. So thanks for pointing that out. It's a very, very interesting. Other interesting space right here is the galloping rises, not galloping, but they're going pretty persistently higher over these crude oil prices. And I want to jump ahead a little bit because I'd like to take that to topic next. On slide 9, you're pulling out not only the big bounce back we've seen, we've really erased that whole Omicron episode that you can see, the huge slide that was triggered in late November by the Omicron announcement. We've fully recovered back above that. And you have the continuous contract, so whatever the front month is price-wise, and we still have a couple bucks to go to reach those cycle highs. But what are you showing on the right there with this chart?
basically that that the rally once again has been driven by the front end of the curve, which is quite could be expected. It's also signaling by doing that. It's also signaling that we're having a market which remains relatively tight, even though we're seeing forecasts for a market being more balanced here during the first part of 2022. But yesterday we. During the past week, we have seen some of the major oil companies in the U.S. Announce that they're removing their hedges, forward hedging, and that's obviously sending a signal to the market that they believe that the market is going to remain firm over the coming periods. And I think it's also a question of that many of these small, medium and large oil companies, they basically shale producing companies, they have trimmed their balance sheets, they have become less dependent on financing from the banks. Meaning that they can be more, do more what they, that they are less dependent on being forced to forward hedge their prices. And this has really led to billions of dollars of losses last year, and it would continue this year, because you can see on the forward curve, sale oil companies, they're not hedging in the spot market, they're hedging maybe 12 to 18 months out. And you can see they're hedging at much lower prices. And if the direction of oil is at a minimum that we stay at that current levels over the coming year, then obviously it doesn't make any sense that you're hedging your oil if you don't have to. Also, the rally, John, has partly been driven by OPEC Plus themselves, because even though they're raising production on paper by 400,000 barrels every month now for several months, the recent survey basis shows that in December only 14 out of 18 countries in the OPEC Plus group managed to raise their production. So basically, they're not living up to, they cannot meet their quotas right now, and that's creating the tightness we're seeing in the market. Just to look ahead to today, we got the weekly stock report from the EIA, and yesterday we saw another drop in crude oil stocks. But against that, we got if that's confirmed, a mammoth jump in gasoline stocks. So that potentially could just take some of the sting out of the rally. But generally, the market is looking for a year of tight supply. OPEC stocks dwindling. And that's the reason why we are at these levels now.
Yeah, and one of the areas besides energy where we worry about inflation, especially in emerging markets, is the inflation with inflation in the food space. Take us through what you're looking through on slide 8 here.
Just basically that we have a massive data dump coming in today from the USDA. The January update tends to be a big one, and they don't disappoint this time either. So later today, I think it's a 5 o'clock GMT. They will release their usual WASDE, which is World Agriculture Supply and Demand Estimates. On top of that, we got quarterly stocks. We got winter wheat planting in the US. We got world stocks and South American production. So generally, a lot of numbers to digest. But I think one thing is one thing you just have to be aware of this release, and also that it could cause some volatility in the market. We've seen a relatively stable market during the past few weeks. If you look at one of the ETFs tracking the Bloomberg Grains Index, with gains in soybeans due to drought in Brazil being offset by some weakness in the wheat space, but mainly just to highlight that we have a quite a big report coming out, and also just to highlight as well that the world-ending stocks are expected to be lower both for corn and soy, potentially unchanged for wheat. But that is really where the worries are, and there was a Bloomberg article earlier this week about the risk of unrest in some of these key food importing countries. So it is a space that we need to watch closely.
Yeah. Another thing we're watching is the gold price. I mentioned it yesterday. It's pretty strong performance we've seen of late, given the backdrop. Of course, it's 1830 level we've talked about so much. Do you just prefer to sit in your hands and wait for it to prove itself here? Or are you looking for something to trigger soon in gold one way or another?
Well, I have to ask both you and Altea for that, because basically Altea's bond market collapse last week was taken pretty well by the gold market. And that's obviously sending a signal of strength that the gold market is watching other things than just real yields. And then since the Powell speech yesterday, we also saw some weakness in the dollar, which has also supported the run-up. But most certainly an interesting start for gold, considering that it's almost close to unchanged on the year. At a time where real yields has during a time where real yields has jumped by a 0.25%, so there are other fish to fry than just yields right now. But clearly, the overall direction still will come from yield and dollar developments.
Okay, and on that front, we have the US CPI release today, expected to have a seven handle, so it's expected 7.0%. That would be the first time since early 1982 that we've seen a seven handle on the US CPI. The core expected to rise to 5.4% from the 4.9% in November. A couple of the things that we're looking for as we're transitioning into this new year is not necessarily that we see the good space providing some of the inflation, but the risk that wages are rising rapidly and driving considerable price rises. And one thing we've pulled out, and this was inspired by our chief economist, Sten Jakobsen, a recent presentation he was giving that I saw a couple of slides from. You can roll over to slide 5, and it is the average hourly earnings for the leisure and hospitality space, where you can see that we're running at a 14% plus year-on-year clip in terms of average hourly earnings. Now, very interesting to see how this happens. A, as the economy more fully opens up, but B, we have a very tight labor market, and C, Omicron is obviously interrupting people's ability to come to work. So many call-ins sick, but this is definitely a source of potential inflation in the services space, because those that are paying these wages are going to have to step up with higher wage levels if they want to attract workers in a very tight market. And then you can see I put up on slide 6, it's just remarkable. We're still looking at a 20% clip in terms of the retail sales growth year on year in the US. That is obviously going to moderate very considerably when we have those key stimulus check months of early 2021 rolling into view, but still very strong demand in the US economy. And then just for those interested in specific equity market stories, Peter Grunry kindly forwarding a slide. He was pulled away from doing the podcast today. But you can see that on slide 10. So a couple of interesting ones. The Just Eat results are very disappointing on the top line. Philips is being restrained by these semiconductor shortages, so unable to deliver what it needs to. Probably would have done far better had it not been for the supply side limitations. And then very interesting, we need to continue to watch China for potential stimulus. We're seeing a pretty decent upside in the market in recent days as the noise level on a new Chinese stimulus rolling into view is increasing quite a bit. And then on the earnings front, one of the first financial companies we'll be reporting today, that is Jefferies. You can see the chart there on slide 11, and that's ahead of the key big banks reporting. And again, our key interest going forward is less sort of the mergers and acquisition investment banking space, but what is the Main Street lending behavior and demand? Are we going to see a new credit cycle engaging? I think that is one of the main points of curiosity for the next cycle, because we'll need to see that engage to avoid a very sharp slowdown from the fiscal cliff or reduction fiscal drag from the fact that we're not seeing these stimulus checks and childcare, tax care payments, et cetera, being injected into the economy on that incredible pace we saw in reaction to the pandemic outbreak. And then the macro calendar for today, as noted, the US CPI is the key focus. Also, there's some good anecdotal stuff on where the different Fed regions are seeing pressures and high activity, low activity in the economy, what they're seeing reported from their various areas of the economy in the Beige Book, which is out later today. And in the background, we have this ongoing issue of the geopolitical risks around Russia and Ukraine and those Russia-NATO talks taking place today. Let's see what kind of reaction we get and headlines we get out of that, as well as in oil space, the World Agricultural Report and the stocks in the U.S. And you can see as well, the 10-year auction up later today for the U.S. Treasury auction, and then the 30-year is out tomorrow. So lots to look forward to here as we see what happens next, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.